Hello and welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast Midweek Destinations and Diversions Show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day Disney vacation fix for Wednesday, June 15th, 2016. The Dad Show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at kingdomstrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort and pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando stroller rentals and an authorized Walt Disney World stroller vendor. Apologies to Chad King and Craig Lewis, the Diz Dads whose trip reports are coming up next. We're going to continue this week with part two of the trip report from my recent trip in May to Walt Disney World and Universal Orlando Resort. Terry Hawkins and I continued talking. We wrapped up last week with the end of the Walt Disney World portion of our vacation. We're going to pick this up with the Universal Orlando side and my six parks in one day adventure that concluded the whole trip. Before I turn the podcast back over to mine and Terry's discussion, there was one issue that I forgot to mention and we forgot to talk about during our conversation that I had said while we were there I had to bring up. And it was one of the really major differences between the experience at Universal Orlando versus Walt Disney World. And that is, you forget after doing a few trips with Magic Bands just how magical that is. You know, we went from Walt Disney World where we had our Magic Bands and you maybe carried, you know, an ID and maybe a credit card and some cash as, you know, backup forms of payment just in case. And that was all you had to have. Well, when we checked in at the Portofino Bay Resort at Universal, I walked away from that desk with my room key, a separate key for access to the club lounge, because I'd booked the club lounge so that I could get breakfasts on my way to the training sessions. So room key and club lounge key were two separate keys. I got my ticket from them, so that was the third, you know, card. I then had to take my ticket over to a kiosk, and from the kiosk, I got my express pass, which was a separate card. So that's four cards. If I'd gotten a meal plan, well, they give you a separate meal plan voucher card as well, so that would have been five cards. All of those things can be handled by Disney with just the wristband. I don't understand why they can't find a way to get their systems to talk to each other so that you can put all of this onto, you know, one easily accessible, readily available, you know, card. Especially because both the ticket and the express pass are actually just kind of lightly laminated paper. And given the way that water rides at Universal Orlando work, you know, I've had my ticket media and my express pass media get so soaked that I had to get them reprinted. And it's just totally unnecessary. I don't get it. I don't know why they do it. It's not really a big deal. It's just kind of an annoyance. And it hit me bigger during this trip than it normally would, because I went, usually when I do this kind of thing and do both resorts, I visit, you know, Orlando, Universal Orlando first, and then Disney second. This time it was the other way around. And so I came from the convenience of the Magic Band to the pile of cards at Universal. And it was just kind of a pain. The next morning, we swapped over from Walt Disney World to the dark side, the Universal side of things. And dun, dun, dun. We were staying, again, at a travel agent discount rate at the Portofino Bay Resort. It was the last of the Universal Resorts that I had not yet stayed in. I'd stayed previously at Hard Rock and at Royal Pacific Resort, wanted to get a feel for the third, their original resort hotels. I got to say that it was a bit of a mixed bag for me. It's a gorgeous resort.
It is. It's beautiful.
I mean,
yeah.
Stunningly beautiful resort. The room is huge, comfortable, well-appointed. All of those things were great. There were a couple of things about it that were just sort of maybe a little odd and kind of annoying. One is, Terry, you ran into an interesting issue.
Yep. Which one was this? Well, getting lost or?
Oh, no. I mean, it is a very spread out resort. And it's got some tricky access issues. It's got this central plaza, which is a beautiful part of its design. And then on the other side, it has this sort of harbor area that's another beautiful part of the design. But those two elements also make access within the resort a little tricky because you can't always get from one end to the other on the same floor.
Yeah. You'd think if you went to the fifth floor, you'd be able to get to the fifth floor of everything because they're connected, but they're not.
Right. There's sometimes something in the way.
Yeah. We found with that one, the third floor, which is the lobby floor, is going to grant you access to most of the resort.
Right. That's kind of the key. You got to go through there. The other issue was that, Terry's doing some home renovations, wanted to get ahead of the laundry a little bit because he wasn't sure he was going to have a laundry room when he got home. And that was a bit of a surprise, yeah?
I was very glad that I did laundry the day that I did over at
Art of Animation.
Art of Animation. I kept thinking the Cars Resort. Because there are no laundry facilities at Portofino. The only laundry facilities apparently are at Hard Rock, which is an important thing to know for families.
Yeah.
Because I don't enjoy spending $6 getting my undies washed.
Right, which is, when you've got to send out for laundry, which is the only way to get laundry done at Portofino, that's what you're looking at.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was a disappointment, but that is what it is. Good idea to know that before you get there, though.
Right. And let's just kind of go through maybe some highlights of the resort. We were there for three nights, and so we did get a pretty good feel for the resort itself. We were staying club level. That was my choice because I was doing this training. Most of the time we were at Universal, I spent at least half of the time that we were there in training. And club level was the right choice for me because we could stop at the club level lounge and I could get breakfast each morning and it was quick and it was on my way and didn't cost me extra. It was real lifesaver from that perspective because otherwise you're paying, whatever the hotel breakfast is like $19 a person. So better to do the club level and have access to those facilities. Thought it would be worth it to kind of just talk about the resort itself and things that stood out about the resort. We've talked about access. We've talked about the fact it's beautiful. Terry, what things to you really kind of stood out about the resort itself?
You spoke of the club level. I enjoyed it, though I found their afternoon snacks to be exceedingly sweet. But that's maybe true. That's just my own palate.
Yeah, I mean, it was. It did tend to be dessert-y stuff, and it would have been nice to have a little bit more of a, salty snack alternative.
Yeah, yeah. But it is it's a beautiful place. Important to note that when you're going, you're taking the boats over, you're going to have to pass through security, which means metal scanners.
Right.
Before you get on the boat.
So this is interesting. This is the way Universal handles their security. It's a little different than Disney's approach. And it's got its, there are things in favor of it, I think. But what they do basically is push the security lines as far out to the perimeter as they can, right? So if you're coming into the Universal theme park area on foot, like taking the footpaths, then they'll have you come through security, which includes metal detectors, as you enter City Walk. If you come in via car and you park in the parking garage, I believe they, well, you would do it again as you came into City Walk out of the parking garages. Yeah. If you come in by boat, what they do is go ahead and have you go through security before you get onto the boat, because they figure once you get on the boat, you're not going to, you know, suddenly gain access to something you didn't have before you got on.
Yeah. And I know what they're going for, and that, but they need to extend the tenting area there, because when we were there, it was quite warm, and going through security and lining up in full sun at the start of the day just starts to drain the batteries early.
That's true. That is true. And the other thing I would say about that is, it felt like there was not much coordination between the security scanning folks and the shuttle, you know, the boat, water taxi operating folks, because, you know, you could have a line of people waiting to board water taxis and they're waiting to go through security, but if the water taxi has already let off and had some people board, even if there's space, they're more concerned with sticking on their schedule. So they'll go ahead and take off while there's a line of people trying to get through security.
Yeah.
And I understand that helps keep them on schedule, but it just feels like, you know, to wait 5 minutes or so to let a substantial group of people get through security would be more efficient in the long run.
Yeah, it's more customer friendly, and it is customer service industry. So wait for the customer, but
right. And I might not have cared, except the one other thing that I would say about that aspect of staying at Portofino is that, you know, having stayed at the other two, the walk from Portofino to City Walk is substantially longer. And I didn't realize how substantially longer until I did it a couple of times. It is a substantially longer walk. It's still doable, but it's not nearly as convenient to walk as either Hard Rock or Royal Pacific Resort.
No, it's probably another 10 minutes from Hard Rock, I'd say. It is a hard walk. And, you know, it's beautiful. They've done great landscaping in that. But again, when it's hot and humid, it's just not the way you want to start the day. So you want to take that boat for sure at the beginning of the day.
And as long as we're talking transportation, we probably ought to go ahead and mention that we did have one other transportation issue. One evening we were in City Walk having dinner, and decided that it was time to head back to the resort, but there were storms in the area. And we learned that anytime there is a lightning strike within 7 miles, they have to shut down the water taxis. They tie them up.
Yeah.
Well,
and that sucks.
Yeah. And again, it's one of those things, you know, I'd run into that before, but I'd run into it when staying at Royal Pacific. So it was a short walk and it was wet, but not a big deal. You know, the day that we were doing this, it was pouring rain. So it was very heavy rain. And that longer walk to Portofino would have made a difference. And so instead of taking the walk, you know, the alternative that they make available is the shuttle buses that are supposed to make the rounds. And I don't know if it was a particularly strange day. It certainly didn't seem it, unfortunately. But their bus transportation loop there at City Walk was not a model of efficiency.
No, they need some serious enforcement there on the taxis and miscellaneous vehicles that are just dropping people off. It was a madhouse. I thought a few times we were going to see fistfights breaking out between drivers and passengers and drivers, and it was chaotic.
Yeah, I mean there were you know, taxi drivers that were sitting there waiting to pick up fares in bus lanes where designated buses were supposed to be pulling in to pick up people. There were taxis sitting in the middle of, you know, in the middle lane of three lanes of traffic, just kind of hanging out. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Yeah. And we still haven't seen our bus for Portofino. I think if we were sitting there waiting for the actual Portofino bus, we'd still be waiting.
Yeah. We were assured no fewer than three times that there would be a specific Portofino bus. And there was even a sign for, you know, a bus to the series of resorts, right? It said that this was the stop for Royal Pacific, Portofino, and Hard Rock. We stood there for at least 20 minutes before, and it was probably closer to 30, before we finally were picked up by a bus that was technically designated for Cabana Bay Beach Resort.
But that's right. And
stopped and
picked
us up.
Kudos to that driver, and a big thank you for seeing that there was a... we filled the bus and then some.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, like I said, we'd been waiting at least half an hour at that point.
Yeah. I still feel sorry for the people in wheelchairs there, because it was not a wheelchair accessible bus. So
right.
They got to sit and wait, and they may still be there.
I certainly hope not. But yeah, I mean, that was just not a good thing. It's not something that I expected to see from a world-class, you know, theme park resort, that they would have such difficulty transporting guests from their own entertainment facility to their own resort hotels.
Yeah. And the enforcement on that whole drop-off area was, they need to step that up.
Yeah. All right. So we, I guess, have opened the discussion of City Walk. So going topically, just talk real briefly about some things that we enjoyed in that City Walk area. I didn't spend a lot of time in City Walk. You spent a little more time than I did, because you spent some time hanging out in Margaritaville.
It is a surprise. Yeah.
But I want to start with a couple of places that we experienced together, and then we can talk a little more about some of the others. We did have dinner one night at Cowfish, which is
a
relatively new place. They specialize in sushi and burgers. An interesting combination and interesting offerings, too. Some really creative variety. So why don't you talk a little bit about what you had at Cowfish?
I had, I think it was the Presley Burger or a Whole Lot of Love.
There you go.
That's what it was, which is basically a PB&J hamburger with bacon. And it was pretty good. I didn't taste the jam at all with it, but peanut butter and hamburgers actually go together pretty well. It's not the best one I've had, but it was pretty good.
Okay. And I went with a blue cheese and bacon burger. It was a good size burger and lots of bacon. Juicy, well cooked, and very flavorful. I enjoyed the burger a lot. We also had some pretty good drinks there.
We did. I don't remember them, but they were good.
Well, actually,
they have a fantastic selection, a huge selection of beer, if I remember correctly.
Well, they had quite a few. We had more beers the next night at the NBC Sports Place.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
But they did have some interesting options at Cowfish. I liked their cocktail menu and tried something that I hadn't had before. I actually made notes, right, because people were asking about it when I took a picture. It was Buffalo Trace bourbon, so good quality bourbon, cherry liqueur, Angostura bitters, orange bitters, honey, and then garnished with candied bacon and a bourbon-soaked dried cherry.
Oh, that's right.
And I was impressed. It was quite tasty. You know, I'm not usually a huge bourbon fan, but it's something that I've been exploring a little bit more lately. I had a bad experience with bourbon back in the day. So it's been a while, and, you know, trying some different ones that maybe weren't quite the same as the ones that I'd had such a bad experience with in the past. And I thought this was very good. And that bourbon-soaked dried cherry that was left over at the end was fantastic.
Yeah. Thank you for giving me the time to look up the menu. I had the Hokkaido Nights, and I could make a day of those drinks. that was really quite good, and might have gone with a Moscow Mule or that after that. I can't remember. We were playing good that night.
Yeah, I think we were taking a little easy that night because. I think we kind of were trying to decide what to do, and that was the same day that we had the transportation issues, and so we were a little concerned about how we were going to get back because the storm had kicked in again.
That's true. They do have spiked shakes there, so next time we go, we'll have to give those a shot.
That's right.
We're going to stay away from the sake, though.
The other place that we ate together at City Walk was at the new NBC Sports Barn Grill, and we actually made a dinner out of appetizers there that was pretty satisfying.
It was. We had, we had sliders, which were okay.
Yeah, I would agree.
But the highlight was those chicken nachos.
Oh, yeah. Those nachos were terrific.
Oh, my Lord. I don't think I've ever had better nachos in my life than those chicken nachos they had there.
And it was a huge portion. I mean, we were sharing, and there were leftovers. And that doesn't happen very often.
No, I'd say there was probably a third of the nachos left over and a couple of the sliders.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think there was one slider left. I think that we'd killed the rest of them. But yeah, about a third of the nachos, and we each had a couple of beers. They had attention, Jason Mitz. They carry Innocent Gun product, so I tried a couple of the different Innocent Gun beers on Jason's recommendation, and enjoyed both of them actually quite a bit.
Yeah,
and I don't remember what Terry was drinking that night.
I think I just went with a couple of different beers myself.
Yeah, you had spent that afternoon at Margaritaville, I think, so.
Yeah, I'd been there for a few hours. And by the way, their tacos at Margaritaville. I've always gone there. I make a point anytime I'm in the Universal area of going to Margaritaville. It's probably my favorite restaurant chain around the world. But their their tacos that they had there, absolute killer. Just the perfect amount of heat and, yeah, fantastic. Goes really well with the margaritas.
All right. Well, so that was a great connection there. I also ended up eating at Margaritaville as part of a private party or a private dinner event there that was part of the training that I was at. So I can comment briefly on their sort of banquet service there. I will say this. It's a nice space. Basically what they do is they've got an upstairs bar area that's cordoned off. And if you've got a private party or you've got, a family reunion group or a, corporate group or any group of that kind, you can book that room and they'll do, a set up a buffet for you. And they did passed some appetizers and there was an open bar. It's a nice facility, a nice option if you're looking for something for a group in the Universal area. So I think that really covers most of our experience on City Walk. We didn't spend a lot of time there. Let's talk a little bit about parks. And again, just kind of doing this in summary more than day by day. One of the things that continues to be a bit of a challenge with Universal is park hours, right? They don't stay open as late. And we ran into a bit of a frustration with wanting to catch dinner. We wanted to try Mythos and went to go try and eat there before the park closed. Park closing was scheduled for, 7?
I trying to say it was, about 7.
Okay, so park closing was supposed to be 7. We went at about 6 o'clock to try and get dinner.
Yeah, 5:30, 6 o'clock, we went over there. And they had closed at 4 or 4:30?
Yeah, I want to say 4:30. That just seems really odd to me. There was no indication there was any kind of special event or anything. It just seemed that that was their regular closing time. And I don't get that. That doesn't make any sense to me at all. Why you would close your signature restaurant. I mean, I get it. The park's going to close at 7. But, you know, there are other parks in the area that, will take dining reservations right up until the time park closes, and they'll just escort you out when you're done with your meal.
Yeah, I was surprised, particularly with, a restaurant that year after year seems to win best in park restaurant in the U.S., and I've still never been able to eat there, and this is one of the reasons.
Yeah. Now, I'm not going to complain too much because we ended up having a really nice meal at Cowfish that night, but it would have been nice to try Mythos.
Yeah.
Let's talk some attractions, just highlights. For you, we did tour Universal Studios first so I could get a look at Diagon Alley because I hadn't been out there since it had opened. What were the things on the Universal side that you experienced that stood out to you?
Alien Attack is down more often than Test Track.
That's the Men in Black ride.
Yeah, the Men in Black ride there. It's still quite enjoyable if you are able to get on. But I think it's really showing age with its reliability. That Diagon Alley, though, and the Simpsons Land are still the highlights. Beautifully themed. Every diehard Disney fan, you owe such a debt of gratitude to Universal for what they've done with the Harry Potter areas and the Simpson Land, because that's what's caused Disney to pick up their game. They're phenomenal and beautifully immersive. What was your thoughts on Diagon Alley, it being your first time up there?
I loved it. I thought Diagon Alley was gorgeous. I agree. They did a beautiful job with the theming. I think we commented at the time, that they've got this sort of signature architectural element of the fire-breathing dragon on top of the bank.
Yeah.
Which is very cool, and he breathes fire every so often, and, all that's great. My only, and maybe I'm, being petty about it, but it just seems to me that if you're going to put the huge dragon on top of the bank, why not have him move?
Yeah, we talked about that, and I fully agree with you on that. I mean, it's not like the technology isn't there to do that. West Edmonton Mall has had a fire-breathing dragon in their theater for got to be 20-some years now. and yes, he is indoors, but that's 20 years of technology. They could have, just had him swinging his head back and forth or doing something. And it's something that's funny because the first time I went to Diagon Alley and saw him, if you'd asked me that night, I'd have swore that he moved.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it's just one of those impressions that, obviously he moves because he should move. And no, he doesn't. he's just a statue.
Yeah. Aside from that, though, I really felt like the theming, again, was a home run. I mean, every single element is just beautifully done. We did go to the ice cream store, Florian Fortescue's.
That was good.
It was very good. And, they had lots of flavor combinations that were interesting and tempting. Some. I probably could have come back there over and over. I felt compelled to try the butterbeer ice cream, which I got and was excellent. It really worked as an ice cream flavor. I dare I say it was even better as an ice cream flavor than it is as a drink.
Good to know. I don't remember the flavor I went with. I think I went with something a little bit off the wall. And they've got several that are really off the wall. Some fantastic looking combinations there. So
yeah, yeah. Some really great choices. My only disappointment, we rode the Gringotts ride, which I quite enjoyed. And my only, again, minor quibble about it, I love the work that Universal has done in creating immersive theming. I really do love the attention to detail in their architecture. I don't understand why they seem to be so reluctant to do the same thing with real, realistic elements in the attractions themselves. So much is tied up in simulation.
Yeah. They've really bought into the whole motion picture 4D sort of thing.
Right. And Gringotts is a great example of that. Everything was screen. And although it was well done, you know, the dragon at the base just called for an animatronic, you know?
Yeah.
There are things that just... It's one more step real, right? When there is a true 3D element.
Yeah, and when you're coming from the theming that you've just been walking through, I mean, you're in Diagon Alley, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not someplace that looks like it. You're in Diagon Alley. You're fully immersed, and then you go on to the ride, and you're shocked. Back to, it's a ride.
Yeah.
You know, you've lost that immersion.
Right. And I don't want to, you know, look, we are definitely quibbling here. I get that, right? There's no doubt that I enjoyed myself. The ride was a lot of fun. And I would not, you know, not claim otherwise. We did enjoy ourselves. But exactly what Terry just said is the reason it's worth mentioning. Because they get the real life piece so right in the rest of the land, it's just that much more glaring when it's missing on the ride.
Exactly. Yeah.
What else about the Universal side, you know, stood out for you?
Love the Simpsons ride. You know, they do a great job there. I'm not a rabid Simpsons fan. I haven't seen every episode. I haven't even seen shows from probably every year, but I still enjoyed the show and really enjoy the whole land there. Though we had I think we both had the chicken and waffle sandwich from...
That's right. We were in mourning for the chicken and waffle sandwich that is lost on the Sleepy Hollow menu, and tried to fill the hole in our hearts with the chicken and waffle sandwich from Cletus's Chicken Shack.
And it's good. You know, it certainly could have been a lot worse. But it's not quite.
No, I mean, look, the Cletus chicken waffle sandwich, I get it. It's Cletus's fast food, not Liberty Tree Tavern Sleepy Hollow's, you know, fresh made waffle. It really did feel like chicken strips on an Eggo.
Yeah, they were Eggos. I'm positive those were Eggo waffles. and that's part of what just made it. Okay, I mean, I get the whole maple flavoring to it, particularly being Canadian. But looking for more savory than sweet, and it just missed by, you know, just a bit.
Right. So it wasn't awful, but it certainly was not a replacement for what we lost there in Sleepy Hollow.
No.
My search continues. So that was, Universal. I would add a couple of things. I still really enjoy the Mummy ride. I think it's a great coaster And
that, I'm not a small guy. I thought that I'd squished you. I flew out of my seat on that, caught some really good air. It had me going tossing back and forth from side to side there. That one really moves.
Yeah, it does. It does. And that's what I like about it, right? I mean, and Mummy is a good example of a nice combination of real life effect and, you know, screen technology.
Yeah.
Because you do get a good blend there of both.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that quite a bit.
Not a ride for the little ones.
No.
There's, it'll give them nightmares.
There's definitely some scary elements there. All right, so that probably is enough said about Universal. We didn't spend that much time, you know, in the park.
I do have one more
comment
there. And that this goes out directly to whoever is designing their ride vehicles. I'm really sorry for whatever man did you wrong, but you got to start building these seats for men and for men of size. Because there's a, we ran into issues on the Gringotts ride where my arms got stuck actually in the sides.
Oh, right.
So
yeah.
I couldn't quite pull them out in time to get the seat thing down. So they pulled me off the ride.
Yeah.
And I fit perfectly fine. But if you go in there with your arms at your side, you're in trouble. They're going to get stuck to you. And then the worst offender would be the Rip Ride and Coaster there, which, yeah. There's a saddle horn there that's in the wrong spot.
Yeah, it is. It is. We'll get to that one a little bit, but all right. So let's talk a little bit about highlights on the Islands of Adventure side. We mostly toured Islands of Adventure separately, really, just because of the way the scheduling worked out. But Terry, what were things that stood out to you on the island side?
I went on the Spider-Man ride for the first time since its revamp. Quite enjoyed it. It's not quite as discombobulated as it was before. Same with the Transformers ride. It seems to make they've pieced it together a little bit better. It still could be some improvements, but the enjoyable rides for what they are. I went up, I started my day with the Jurassic Park ride. Going down there, probably not the wisest move because it stuck me in the front. but I wrapped my phone in my hat and my eyeglass cloth there to try to keep it dry, and it didn't short out, so that's good. But I got fairly soaked. I made the mistake of going for lunch at the little safari burger place there that they have. And that's not a good burger.
And that's really unfortunate because, I mean, come on, how difficult is it to just make a nominally acceptable burger?
Yeah. I should have really known going in, but, skip that place. If you're really starving, skip it.
There are other choices, some of which actually are pretty good.
Yeah. And that's definitely not one of them. But they've got some room for improvement there. I didn't do the Meet the Raptor thing that they have going, but I saw pictures that John Peters had done that the week after, and that looked pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the newer pieces of the Jurassic Park area.
Yeah, but it's a picture. You're getting your picture taken with with an animatronic raptor, which looks very realistic in that. I just wasn't willing to stand in line for 45 minutes to do that.
Cool.
And Yeah, that's the highlights from that side of the park.
Right. I mean, I think for me, and we'll talk more about the Islands of Adventure side, maybe a little bit more about it when we kind of switch roles here in a moment. I will say one of the things I like on the studio side is the Wizarding World, the older Hogwarts area. I think it's benefited from the expansion sort of by subtraction because it spreads the crowd out a little better. And I felt like the Hogwarts area was a lot more pleasant to navigate than it was the last time I was there.
Oh, for sure. I can imagine. Yeah, when we were there, when it was the only part open too, I mean, it was just jam-packed. But yeah. This, you can walk around, you enjoy the decor, the theming more because of the lessened crowd.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so that is kind of a decent summary. That leads us to sort of the last thing that probably is worth talking about. And for that, we're going to kind of switch roles here for a minute. We're, you know, on our last day, it was going to be the last day. I knew Terry was leaving. My training had been a lot more intensive and taken a lot more time than I even had even expected. So I had this extra theme park day to use at Universal, but I also had one more night because my flight was early the next morning and ended up booking myself one night over at the Yacht Club because I hadn't stayed at Yacht or Beach Club yet. So I wanted to make sure that I got that covered as long as I was there. It was convenient. I could get a good rate. So I booked the one night there, and I'm trying to decide what to do. And I thought, okay, I'm going to have some fun with this. And so just the night before I did it, hit on the idea that, okay, well, what if I tried to hit six parks in one day? Because several guys had done four parks in one day recently. Wouldn't it be kind of fun to see if I could pull off six in one day?
Yeah, and I thought you were still drunk when you said that. But apparently you weren't. So explain to everybody here, Aaron, exactly how you started off the day with that how you accomplished it. Because that was a pretty impressive feat to watch as I made my legs back home.
Well, so the plan really came together fairly quickly. You know, the logistics is the key, right? If you can figure out how to arrange the pieces, then once we did that, it fell together pretty nicely. The first piece, obviously, was to set the challenge, decide exactly what the challenge was going to be. And we decided that the challenge was going to be to visit six parks during normal operating hours and to visit at least one thrill ride attraction. I was going to try and do roller coasters as much as possible, but thrill ride attraction at each park and eat something from each park, a snack or a food item from each park. Looking back, I probably could have added in a show, but, you know, at the time we were trying to be a little conservative because it was six parks in one day. And because we were already at Universal, it was obvious that I needed to start with Universal Parks, get those out of the way first. And since I'd ridden the Hogwarts Express from Diagon Alley to Hogwarts, I decided I wanted to be able to do that the other direction, and that would help with the flow through the Universal Parks. So,
right. Yeah. So this is where the staying on site at Universal helped you, right? Because you got into the parks early. Did you do that, or was it regular hours?
That was the theory, is that I was going to get into the park early. The way it actually played out, because I had to get packed up also. It ended up that I didn't actually get out the door in time to be there for early admission, but really it worked out fine. What I did was go ahead and get, you know, everything packed up and loaded my rental car. And that way I was ready to go as soon as I finished in the Universal Parks. And I got to the to Islands of Adventure, you know, probably right at regular park opening. Luckily, it wasn't a particularly busy day in the park. And I just headed straight back to the Wizarding World. And, you know, decided right off the bat that if we were going to do this, we're going to do it right. So hopped in line for Dragon Challenge. And that's the point at which I realized that there was an element that I hadn't really considered. And I guess I should take a step back. Right before I hopped in line for Dragon Challenge is when it hit me that this was an issue. That is that at Universal, virtually any attraction that is even remotely a thrill ride, you pretty much have to empty your pockets.
Yes.
Everything goes in a locker. And the locker system really isn't that complicated, particularly for guests for whom English isn't their first language. The way it's explained is very unclear and frustrating for them. And so it's not even that it takes a long time to access the lockers. It's that it takes a long time because it's crowded in there as other people are trying to figure out how to get their stuff out of the locker.
Yeah, and particularly that Dragon Challenge area, that one, because it retrofitted in there,
yeah,
really doesn't fit well. It's in a crowded area already.
Right.
So I was concerned with you doing that one right off the start because of my experience the day before of waiting 10 minutes because everybody's in line, but all the lockers are full. Everybody's in line trying to put stuff in. But because they're blocking the way, people that want to get stuff out can't get in.
Right, exactly. And I did run into a little bit of that. I did get my things into the locker. You know, it ended up being not too bad. Trying to remember. My only issue was I realized after I had done it that there was, you know, I still had my wallet in my pocket, and I was afraid that it was going to trigger something because, you know, I was supposed to have left that in the locker. But I did manage to get through with it. So that part at least was a good thing. The ride itself, it was almost walk-on at that point in the morning. I didn't remember just how long that queue line was from the last time I rode it, because it had been a while.
And that's not the original queue. Back when it was Dueling Dragons, that was kind of the exit.
Maybe that's it, because maybe they've changed the access since the last time I rode it.
Yeah, when it was Dueling Dragons, before Harry Potter came in, the queue was much better.
Well, the queue wasn't bad. It was just very long, and it was noticeably long.
It's more noticeably long when there's nobody in it than when there is.
Well, exactly. I mean, just trucking along, and it's like, okay, is the ride going to get here eventually? But, you know, it was not a long wait. I was able to get on the attraction quickly, had a fun ride, enjoyed it a lot, hopped off the coaster, decided to head right across the pathway and grab a butterbeer. I did have to retrieve my stuff from the locker first and, you know, did have some juggling to do there to get access, as we talked about a little bit. Used my favorite butterbeer trick, which is that you never, ever, ever go to the cart. There's always twice to three times the wait to get butterbeer from that butterbeer cart that's in the pathway. Go into the Hogshead Tavern. They've got two butterbeer taps, and if it's busy enough that they need it, they've got two bartenders. It's much, much quicker.
Yep, that's a very good trick for everybody.
Yeah. So I got my butterbeer and, you know, just took it with me and hopped in line to take the Hogwarts Express across to the Studios Park, figuring that kind of would, you know, kill two birds with one stone, because not only does it take me from one park to the other, but it drops me off, you know, kind of deep in the attractions for Universal Studios instead of at the entrance where you've got to go through all the shops and all that stuff first. You know, got over there and I was debating what to do about, you know, the thrill ride, because Mummy is closest to King's Cross Station. And so, you know, that would have been an easy yet. But then again, I'd ridden that already with Terry earlier, and I hadn't ridden Rip Ride Rocket. And we talked a little bit about maybe why you would avoid riding Hollywood Rip Ride Rocket. I finally said, okay, you know, if I'm going to do six parks in one day, if it's going to be meaningful, then I ought to, you know, really do the challenge. And I got to say, this is a part where I lucked out hugely, because I went to get in line for Hollywood Rip Ride Rocket, and the attraction must have been down before I got there, because as I was putting my things in the locker, they were reopening.
Nice.
Yeah,
that was stroke of luck.
Timing could not have been better. This is another place where having Express Pass made a huge difference, because you can imagine when the attraction was down for a while, the standby line, you know, it grew. So you had this backlog of people in the standby line waiting to ride. And by getting in that Express Pass line, I bypassed all of that. So got on fairly quickly. I've found that my solution to the problem, which worked moderately well at least, was to approach riding Rip Ride Rocket a bit like, a soccer fullback lining up to defend a corner kick.
Yeah.
If that creates an image in your head.
Unfortunately.
in that position, it was a relatively less uncomfortable attraction. And you know, I got to give the coaster itself credit. It's a fun coaster.
I love that coaster. I mean, that it is phenomenal. It's phenomenal design. Just those seats are going to have you singing soprano.
Yeah, I think they violate several provisions of the Geneva Convention.
I think so too.
But in any case, I survived it. I was stuck a little bit when it came time to get something to eat there, right? Because I was far away from where the Wizarding World is. This is where the fact that there's just not a lot of quality quick service at the studios came back to bite me a little bit. I ended up stopping at the gift shop on my way out and grabbing some Bertie Bott's Every Flavor beans. Now, I had initially commented that I was going to have to share them with my kids, because I think it was Matt Feeney who said that, I had to try
eat the whole
thing. All right, I will preface this by saying there's more on this coming. Because I had said I was going to share with the kids, and I, you know, was just eating a few. And actually, they were, you know, the first, I mean, they were good stuff. I had several. They were tasty anyway. Headed out of the studios, just went straight back to the parking garage, grabbed my car, drove over to Walt Disney World, realized that it was still early, so it made more sense to go directly to Animal Kingdom than it did to go to the Walt Disney World Hotel and check in first. So I went straight to Animal Kingdom and parked at Animal Kingdom, went in, went straight back to Expedition Everest, got in
the best ride in the best park,
got in the single rider line. It was, perfect. I mean, I maybe had a 10 or 15 minute wait tops from the single rider line, had a, fun ride on Expedition Everest, came back down, decided to pick up a snack from Harambe Marketplace. It was actually, by this time, it was good, time for an early lunch kind of thing. And I was a little conflicted because I, would have rather have eaten at Epcot or something like that, but thought I should grab something to eat. Went to Harambe Marketplace. I think I just chose the wrong item.
Uh-oh.
I got the corn dog thing,
Oh, yes, you were saying before there.
Right, it's like a curry corn dog or something. And the thing is that, the flavor was okay. It just, the texture was off. And I think it may have just been that I got a bad batch, right, that wasn't, the oil wasn't hot enough or something when they made it. Because it sometimes happens when they're making high volumes of stuff, the temperature of the oil drops when they're making a lot. Because the breading just was really kind of soggy, and when that happens, it's usually because it's absorbed oil, because the oil wasn't hot enough.
Oh, that's unfortunate, because they have some fantastic options there.
Yeah, I think, you know, if I had to do it again, I would have gone with a meat skewer of some sort.
Meat on a stick?
Yeah, I mean, can't go wrong with meat on a stick. So anyway, but in any case, I did get something to eat there that counted. I kind of paid for it. When I took my break, my stomach was less than pleased, and it wasn't the fault of the coasters. soldier on, fight through. And I was, you know, posting to social media all along just because it was fun to kind of bring people along for the experience. So after Animal Kingdom, I headed over to Yacht Club to check in. Really lucked out when I went to check in at Yacht Club, because it was only about probably 11:30 noon, right around there. But my room was ready. So I was able to go ahead and get into the room, which was a big help because I actually had some work I had to get done. I had a couple of clients who needed some things taken care of. So I was able to get those things squared away, even take a little bit of a break. And sort of as I'm taking my break, I'm snacking on the Every Flavor beans. This is where
help in the stomach.
This is where I hit every single one of the Every Flavor beans that didn't belong in any flavor. Oh, vile, vile things. I think I hit like 3 or 4 ash flavor.
Oh.
Just nasty. Now I remember why I don't generally get Birdie Bot Every Flavor beans. Explains a lot. So anyway, got that stuff done, got a little bit of a rest in, headed back out to Hollywood Studios, gotten the standby line the single rider line for Rock and Roller Coaster, which was a tough call, right? Because it was, you know, sometimes that single rider line doesn't necessarily move so quickly.
Yeah. Now, what time was this?
Because
you mentioned you had to do some work.
Right. It was probably 3 o'clock or so by the time I got to the studios.
Okay, so it took you a good couple hours.
Yeah,
You checked in.
To get checked in and get the work done. I mean, that was the bigger issue, is that I had things that took some time to work through. But Road Rock and Roller Coaster, had a fun ride, you know, single rider with somebody who had never ridden it before. Grabbed a Mickey bar on my way out and caught a little bit of some of the Stormtrooper show that was going on. And then from there, I was tempted to do the walk again over to Epcot, but also was dealing with the fact that my feet were starting to feel the fact that I'd been through 4 theme parks at that point.
Yeah.
So I did go ahead and just take the boat all the way across. And this is, even this time when I was already, you know, tired or whatever, I couldn't do it. I couldn't sit on the boat all the way across. I actually got off at Beach Club and walked the rest of the way over to Epcot. But on the way into Epcot, I stopped at the Florida Fresh, I think it was called Florida Fresh still, booth that was set up for Flower and Garden Festival, and got the shrimp and grits, which I'm glad I'd gotten that opportunity because I love that offering and it was tasty as always. Also had a Feast of Flower farmhouse ale that was tasty and went well with the shrimp and grits. And then as I made my way through World Showcase toward the Epcot Thrill Ride, because, you know, there was no roller coaster to ride there, I did make a slight detour. You know, look, a rum Dole Whip is always on the way.
Yeah.
So I did stop and get a Dole Whip with coconut rum this time, from the Pineapple Promenade, and then continued on to Test Track. Rode Test Track via the single rider line. Was a little annoying there. I think I mentioned it. Look, I get it. I don't mind when there are a bunch of kids in theme parks. That's fine. That's fun. And I don't even mind groups of kids in theme parks. That's fun too. However, when you're there with a group of 12 people, you don't belong in the single rider line. It's just kind of obnoxious.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had this large group of middle school, high school kids that were all in the single rider line in front of me. And I wish, if I'd noticed it before I got in single rider, I probably wouldn't have gotten in that line. I would have just ridden standby. But it ended up being fine. You know, it created the appearance of more delay than there really was, because they had a tendency to kind of sprawl out and spread out. And so it made the line look longer than it was. And I know I sound like a cranky old man, I'm sure, when I complain about it, but.
Oh, I think we all feel your pain right now.
But, you know, I did enjoy it. Had a lot of fun. Had a great ride on Test Track, and then continued on. I walked on out the front, hopped on the monorail to head across to the Magic Kingdom. By this point, it was, you know, getting on towards evening. It was kind of twilight-ish, really, at that point. Maybe not twilight, because sun wasn't going down, but it was, you know, probably 5:30-ish, 6-ish.
Well past nap time.
Yes, yes. Monorail across, you know, my, I got a calf cramp around this time, and I was thinking, oh, this could be bad, but luckily it stretched out while I was on the monorail, and I was okay. Headed on into Magic Kingdom, realized that, you know, I had some time to play with, so, I went across to, the relocated, Sunshine Seasons and got myself a citrus swirl. My favorite. I'd had several Dole Whips this trip, but had to go back to the first love, the citrus swirl,
for my Magic Kingdom. You can be forgiven.
And as long as I was over in the area, I hopped on Pirates of the Caribbean, and enjoyed another ride on Pirates, kind of as my bonus e-ticket. And then I had made a fast pass reservation for Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, because there were still some available earlier in the day. And that's, I got to leverage the fact that you could make a fast pass for a different park on the fly. And that was kind of nice. So
yeah, that's a nice modification now.
Right. So I rode Big Thunder, and that was my fifth roller coaster, fifth roller coaster, seventh or eighth attraction of the day, and completed my six-park challenge. I was tempted to go and ride Space Mountain so that I could actually get in six roller coasters. And then I looked up at, you know, how far it really was going to be to walk all the way over there to Tomorrowland, and then I gave up. I went back. Well, I admit it.
No, that's, you think about that. You walk the length of Islands of Adventure, the length of Universal Studios. You walked, pretty much just about the farthest walk you can do in Animal Kingdom and back. Then you did the entire length of Epcot. And, you know,
right.
And then across Magic Kingdom. That Space Mountain's a heck of a long way.
It is. It is. I think, if I remember correctly, my total mileage logged was, I believe it was a total of 12 miles walked. And I did finish before 9 o'clock p.m. And, you know, went ahead and headed back to Yacht Club at that point. I was in desperate need of a shower. you know, got cleaned up a bit. Went down and enjoyed a late dinner at Cruise Cup, which was a nice, you know, I was glad
that's
I was
a nice
at Yacht Club. Because at that point, I was tempted to try to walk back to Epcot, but it was close to 9 o'clock. It was going to be, you know, I was going to be cutting it close to even get in there to get someplace to eat. And making the walk again, I just couldn't do it.
No.
Overall, I mean, I had an interesting day. It was a fun day, and it was nice to have a goal and something to work towards. Ultimately, you know, would I do that with my family? No, it would not have been fun with my family. But as an exercise for myself, it was a lot of fun, and it was fun to kind of have people, you know, following along on social media and the group chatting in the Facebook group and things like that. It was a good day.
Well, it was fun following you on Facebook as I was flying back home each stop, getting to see what you'd done and that. They're still a little disappointed that you didn't make it over to Stitch, but you know, that's a challenge for somebody else. Maybe is to do the Stitch like rides for all six parks there. Which
we could do that. We should make the a list.
Most annoying.
Yeah. Well, there's a future podcast topic there. I think you know the least favored attraction in each park.
There we go. Yeah.
See if we can find winners in those categories. All right. Well, you know, I think we've dragged this show out about as long as we possibly can. I apologize. You know, we got to talking. It was fun. So we kept going. But thanks for listening. Terry, thanks for hopping on with me and talking a little bit more.
Thank you so much for inviting me too on the trip there. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's always, look, theme parks are always more fun with friends, and especially Diz Dad's friends. So, you know, glad to have you along, Terry. Again, thanks for hopping on and recording so that we could share this with the rest of the group, and look forward to talking with you again in down the road here. I know that you're working on your plans for Diz Dad's Club Convention, the big number 5 coming
big
up here.
Number 5 coming, yeah.
January 2017.
Yeah, looking forward to that.
Excellent.
Everybody get your rooms booked.
That's right. Officially, Walt Disney World, if you're not racing, Walt Disney World packages for January open in just a couple of weeks here. The official date was just announced yesterday. June 21st is when booking for 2017 opens for regular Walt Disney World travel packages.
Yeah, so I advise you, everybody, call your favorite Mouse Masters travel agent. Get everything booked up ahead of time.
Thanks for the plug.
How's that plug? One little spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation. Right at the start of everything that's new, one little spark lights up for you. Oh, hello there. So glad you could come along. I am the Dreamfinder. Musical notes, what delightful melodies those will make. I love these flights of fancy, searching the countryside for sounds, colors, ideas, anything that sparks the imagination. A sunbeam, that's a good one. Everything that I can collect can inspire amazing and marvelous new ideas. And you never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Two tiny wings, eyes big and yellow, horns of a steer, but a lovable fella. From head to tail, he's royal purple pigment, and there, voila, you've got a figment of imagination.